Okay, the next two public hearings are combined hearing. Item number two is a subdivision and rezoning for 108 Scotia Street under file DASZ 32 of 2011. In accordance with the City Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, this is a combined hearing, and the following item will also be heard at the same time. Item three is a conditional use at 108 Scotia Street under file DCU 160617 of 2011D.
Okay,
Chairperson Pactica,
yeah,
I'd like to make a declaration in regards to this hearing.
Okay.
I just wanted, for the record, to let people know, as a new city councilor, there's a rule that talks about not having conversations with people wanting to present on either side of a hearing that would come to the committee. I forgot about that, and I had four conversations with people on four sides of this particular hearing, and I had a conversation with Judy Wash, Elisa Lees, a lengthy one. I've had a discussion with Dudley Thompson, a very short one, which I don't think is of any substance at all, but and I also had a discussion with some people who wanted to give me some information in regards to the developer's application for rezoning. And so with those conversations, I have not actually formed any position at this point. As a matter of fact, I have some really tough questions to ask people in regards to both sides' positions on this. And I also need to also declare that without my knowledge, I was in the basement actually reading material for this week, and my wife actually has signed a petition that says that they don't want a fourplex. Actually, and I had a lengthy discussion with her about it because, I'll just leave it at that. Again, I have not formulated any opinion based on any discussions with my wife, who actually had an image in her mind, which is probably false. But anyway, that's besides the point. I'm not deciding. I just needed to declare that. So I think everybody who's here at the hearing should know that before we proceed. But I believe that I'm capable of hearing from both sides and making a decision in this particular application.
All right. Thank you very much, Councillor Eady. Appreciate that. We'll proceed with the subdivision rezoning. This will be heard together.
Yes, it's a combined hearing.
Okay. It'll be a combined hearing. So on the subdivision rezoning, I'll call up the applicant, Mr. Pramjit Shahi. Are you here? Okay. All right, sir. Just state your name and address for the record, please.
Brian Mansky. Address is room 200, 1200 Pembina Highway.
All right.
And I'm representing the developer on this. We are the designer of the multifamily solution for this property. I have additional materials here showing what the development concept is, if you would like.
Sure. Great. And Mr. Mansky, you'll have 10 minutes to speak.
Okay.
At the request of our client, we examined the property that was available on Scotia Street and came up with a multifamily solution to this property comprising of four units. We have designed a fourplex building that is, in essence, upper and lower units, and each of these units also have a share of basement areas. Each unit would be able to accommodate 3 to 4 bedrooms, plus all of the other amenity spaces, storage, laundry that would happen required within a dwelling unit. So the solution gives us a pretty good size family oriented living spaces. We've complied with all of the zoning requirements for such a unit in the setbacks, area coverage, and the quantity of parking required for the units
So you've read the report of the public service?
Well, the public service report was just forwarded to us yesterday, and it's in a Word document. We were unable to open it. I'm a little behind on the word processor. If I could get those kind of documents as a PDF, it would be easier to handle.
Yeah, it's on the internet, so.
Yes, it's in a PDF on the internet.
Okay.
Councillor Eady?
Actually, you provided us with some images there, or drawings. Are those in addition to what you submitted upon your application?
There's a color rendering of the exterior of the unit that's in addition to the two-dimensional line drawings that we created.
A color rendering? Okay, so can you describe that for me?
What we've done is, what we're showing in the rendering is, on the main floor, we have a staggered entry area to give identity to each individual unit so that the entries are not sitting side by side. And it's a fully porch-style covered entry. The living room windows in the units are very large projecting bay windows to break up the front elevation and to bring an extra view and light into the living room spaces. The materials we've utilized on the exterior is we've used some horizontal siding, we've used some vertical siding, we've used some shingles, light material siding, and we've accented all the corners with trim boards. There is the segments of the walls that are flanking the bay windows are full height cultured stone.
I'm sorry, where's the cultured stone?
The cultured stone is in the areas between the front entry porch and the bay window. The full height of the wall is about a 5 foot wide piece of cultured stone. So there's two of those on either side of the giant bay window.
So when you say there's front porch entrances, is that for one door each, or is it?
The front porch handles two doors on one side, right. And then on the exact opposite side is the same sort of porch entry handling the other two doors. Now, this porch entry also forms a balcony for the second floor occupant. So the second floor occupant has a not a bad size little balcony space to use from the Scotia Street. That's correct.
What's happening on the back of the house?
The back of the house is the bedroom windows look out onto the back of the house. There's each unit has two bedrooms looking into the back. And in the back, we have seven parking stalls, and we have room for the trash bins.
The individual carts that will be distributed next year?
That's right. They can line up in that space. And between the parking and the back of the unit, we have 13 feet of grassed area.
So are there windows on the sides of the house?
There are no windows on the sides of the house.
I imagine that's the stairwell to get up to the...
That's right. There's a stairwell, and there's a washroom, and then the side of the bedrooms. There is sufficient room on the lot. In putting this type of unit on, it's the two lots together form a 66-foot wide package. Yeah. So with our building width, we're able to have a little bit more than 6 feet on either side of the building. So we've got a nicer side yard setback than if this was a single-family house, we would be working with a 4-foot side yard.
Okay. So you have the side yards. What's the proposed selling? Like, what's your estimated selling?
The estimated selling price would be about $250,000
a unit. Okay. That's a Scotia,
so that's right.
There's an existing, I think, foundation from the house that burnt down on there. I think where you're situating this building on the property are Is it proposed that you're utilizing the existing foundation?
No,
we would form part of the new foundation?
We'd be removing the, if there's any debris or rubble in the in that area, it would have to be moved out.
And any existing concrete from?
Any existing concrete footings, any floor down there, any piping or anything, any debris that's in there would have to be trucked away from the site.
So in, have you looked at other homes in this neighborhood? Like, what's your perspective on its fit in this particular?
Well,
this is kind of the this is Kildonan Drive for the north end, right?
So that's right.
And
Yeah, and this is off the riverside. It's quite a mix of housing styles through the neighborhood, built through a number of eras, and there is other multifamily units in close proximity. There's a parking, there's an apartment building about a block away on the opposite side of the street.
I think, I'm not sure, but I'd ask administration, but I think that apartment block is now condos, I think. I'm not sure. But
it's a multifamily building.
Yeah, it's a multifamily, yes.
How it's paid for, yes.
Yes, I'm very familiar with that area. So, but really, is Smithfield and Scotia is where the other two multiple family units exist. So you see that as being part of this particular neighborhood? Kind of.
Well, somewhat, in that this is a smaller lot, and this is relatively low density. We're only talking about four units on it, and it's a 66-foot wide lot, which means that if we split it and use the 233s, you would to fit into this neighborhood as single family, you would do it as 33-foot lots. That way you would be down to about a 24-foot wide house onto there. So you'd fit two houses at about 24-foot wide, 1,400 square foot plus, and that would push us up into about the $300,000 price range per unit.
Per unit?
Yeah. So there's a big disparity between the prices of single-family versus multi.
So you're saying that's what could be built if you had just the two separate 33-foot lots?
That's right.
Okay. With the R1 designation, right? I have this question here. I'm kind of interested in this, but and you're the designer, actually?
That's right.
Okay. Are you familiar with a building style that's used in London? And could you not, I'm trying to figure out, it might not be in my business, but the point is, why would somebody buy a home where somebody above them is going to live and make noise?
Well, we've built these packages before in apartment-style condos, and we have several of these type of units under construction currently. We are putting together a very robust sound deadening system in the floor. We're going beyond building code minimums for the blockage of sound, and the methods we've employed in other units have worked out quite well. We've limited the sound between the units, I think, quite effectively. People that are in there have reported back that, with the exception of a couple of units that did use hardwood floors in too many spaces, most of the floor systems worked out quite well.
Okay. What I'm wondering, there's a lot of center hall planned homes along Scotia. You're familiar with the style?
Yes.
Center hall?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I think there's a very large building set way back on Scotia that's a center hall plan. It's a big building. I know of some on Rupert's Line Boulevard where they have center hall plans. There's a particular, what's the possibility of changing a design to have a four, technically, there's this place at 530. We had a hearing a couple of months ago about a property where they have four homes built all in the same building, but it's a basement, main floor, and top floor on each corner of the building. Has the A-frame roof and everything like that. Looks like a house. Doors are in the center. As a person who's blind, I'm envisioning something like that it kind of looks like a center hall plan building.
A center hall plan building where there's one front entry, one rear entry?
Well, yeah, or two. Some of the houses along Scotia have like what looks like two doors, right?
So then we'd have to have two front entry doors and two rear entry doors?
That's correct. And then what happens with this building is to meet the fire code, one of the windows has to be a certain size and push out. There's many examples of single entry homes, but
on all these, the
what it really does is separate. Like, do you think you could, like, what do you think the possibilities are on something like that?
Well, this particular unit could be built that way. I've placed it so that the entry doors are at the outside corners of the building versus the inside corners. Just comes up as a problem with putting in two entry doors at the rear. We don't have enough width. We need the whole backspace to handle both bedrooms.
But you could have, like, this whole construction I'm talking about, you have bedrooms on the top floor. You have your dining room, living room.
Oh, they're done as two-story units.
The units go vertical.
Yeah, they're vertical, right? They're two-story units.
Just two-story units vertical.
So when you're looking at it, you're only seeing two homes on each side, really. But you're seeing two picture windows, which looks like a center hall plan. If you look at 90 Rupert's Land at the face, there's two huge picture windows on the main floor, and there's two huge sets of windows on the upstairs in the bedrooms. So
I think if we had a deeper lot, we could do that. This is only a 99-foot deep lot.
Well, technically, I think you still have the proper setbacks.
Because you have
13
setbacks.
Feet of grass.
Yeah, we got 13 feet.
Yeah, 13
feet, in the
feet
back.
At the back, right? Yep. Which is still, like, that's not a front entrance, right? Like, your front yard faces the Scotia.
That's right.
So technically, you already have the setbacks on the back of the yard to do this. It's the same footprint, the building. It's just a different design. Anyway, so just throwing it up there.
Yeah, I understand. Given the width of the units, I think we would run into it depends on where the stairways fit in here, front and back.
You still have 2,500 square feet per floor.
Yeah.
According to my calculations, you have, 2,500 square feet per each level. So that's the way you're proposing. You have a design where it's 1,200 square feet per home.
That's right.
It would still be approximately 1,200 square feet per home. Anyway, I'll leave that.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Eady.
They didn't have a window that faced the backyard. Yep.
They would have living room windows that face.
Well, the other question I was going to have is: are you proposing, like, are there any trees on this particular lot?
There are. Most of the trees on this lot are boulevard trees. I think the rest of the trees if there were any trees on the lot, I think most of them would have been obliterated.
Right.
Now, as part of the development, we would be landscaping the yard. There would be trees and shrubs that would have to be planted. That's the city bylaw.
Okay. So you could do that in the backyard, too?
Oh, definitely. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have planned on doing some planting in the front and rear yards.
Yeah, like... People do have windows that look out on side yards too, right? That are between houses are 10 feet. Or
If you have 4-foot side yards, there's a limited amount of glass we can provide into side yards.
But I'm just saying in the back. Anyway, so it's just a suggestion. I'm just finding out if you think this is possible. I think that's all the questions I had about the design and everything. You answered the question. Oh, yeah. Stairs are why you have no windows on the sides of the houses?
That's right. We have staircases running up from the porch front entry. The front half of the home is entries and staircases. Then there's another segment of about 8 feet, which comprises of where the bathtub is and one bedroom closet. And then we're into the one bedroom, and its window is facing into the rear. So we really don't have a dining space or something like that along that side of the house, then it would be reasonable to put a window in there. But we're focusing all the views out towards Scotia Street.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's all the questions I have for you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Eady. Councillor Sharma?
So folks are parking at the back of the units here?
The parking's at the back off the rear lane.
There's no rear entry, so they would come along the sides?
That's right. And come to the front of the house. Yeah, and let's say we have a little over 6 feet on the side yard, and that's the other reason for putting the entries towards the corners, right, to reduce the travel distance to the rear. Mm-hmm.
The graphics, the five circles there on the back?
Those are trees and shrubs.
Yeah. Okay. And is that backyard?
Yes.
For each of the units, will there be fences between? Or
there will be a parking fence with plugs. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's open space for everyone.
It's open
to
space.
Enjoy.
Yes, that's right.
And the trash bin, there's just one little...
We've shown a area for trash bins, one along the side there.
Right, but we are going out to the... changing over the rollout carts next year?
That's right.
The auto bin will no longer be there.
That bin won't be there. The rollout carts will, mm-hmm. I suppose, on garbage day, they would be lining up the carts through one of the parking spaces.
In the back lane, but...
Or right in the back lane.
Follow-up question is just where are they going to store the garbage cans
before
they put them out in the back lane?
They have that 6 foot wide space available to them when the parking parking on one side ends and leaves about 6 feet. So there's enough room to.
And I think we're going with recycled carts. Mm-hmm. So space for recycled carts.
Councilor Sharma, you're good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Maskey, you will get a chance to come up again for rebuttal. So I'll ask you to stand down.
Thank you.
What else we got here? In support is Mohammed Farouk. Do you wish to speak or just be registered in support? Okay. Harpreet Shahi, support? Okay. Rajinder, support. Devinder Pal Singh, support. Okay. Sam Sabdu, support. Okay. Anyone else in support who I haven't called that wish to speak? Okay. We'll go on to those registered in opposition. There's a number of folks registered in opposition. So I'll call your name, and if you wish to speak, just come up and state your name and address for the record, and you'll have up to 10 minutes.
Okay.
Brent Morden, you wish to speak? Registered in opposition? Okay. Maureen Early?
Yes.
Opposition? Okay. Doug Kozenga? Opposition? Okay. Katie, pardon me?
Kopchenik,
yeah.
Opposition.
Okay. Jennifer Pachowski. Okay. Can't read this name here, sorry. Looks like Henry.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, come on up, please. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Just please state your name and address for the record again. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. My name is Dr. Henry Pops. I live at 125 Scotia, approximately one block from the lot in question. I had actually thought I'd be speaking last, but since you've called me first. We moved onto Scotia Street in 1992. We are the third owner of a house built in 1933. I am going somewhere with this. Our neighbor to the north had lived in that home since 1927. The house to the north of that, okay, the person had lived in since 1935. This is a very stable neighborhood that we're talking about here. The Gooches, the people who lived in this on this property beforehand, lived in there until were already there when we moved into this area in 1992. to bring the members of the committee up to speed, this lot is associated with a serious tragedy in our community. We lost four members of our community all in one day. We lost Mr. Marsh down the street, and we lost the Gooch family all in one day back a couple years back. This has been a very traumatic situation, but I do believe that it's time to move on and look at, you know, this space being utilized again. We've had, as a community, a time to grieve. We've had a time to be together as a community. We had a small memorial service there for the Gooches, right in front of their home. And this has probably been the most significant trauma in our community, certainly in the time that I've been there since 1992. We're not a NIMBY community. That's not who we are. We've hosted a number of different facilities in our neighborhood, all without complaint. We've hosted halfway houses for sex offenders. We've hosted halfway houses for people coming out of prison. We currently host a couple of homes in our immediate neighborhood for that child and family has. And you know what? We do all that in the spirit of community, in the spirit of neighborliness. Matter of fact, one of these CFS homes is one or two houses north of the property in question. We've recently, there's been some mention about other higher density areas facilities in the area. Specifically this apartment block, which has now been turned into condos, about a half a block north and across the street from the lot in question. That is a 1920s building that's recently been upgraded. It would no way pass code today. It's got nowhere near enough parking. It's got nowhere near enough anything. Okay, but again, it's been a part of this community now for, you know, 90 years. The other two higher density facilities at Smithfield in that area, again, are 1920s, 1930s vintage. Otherwise, this is an R1 area, and it's a single-family dwelling area. And that's how it's zoned. People, as recently as this summer, have bought homes on this street with the idea that this is single-family dwelling area. And we're in agreement with city planning. That's what this place should be, okay? And that's how it should remain. So as a group, that's is how we feel. A couple of issues that we need to deal with, and the most relevant of those is the parking. If we are looking at people buying $250,000 condos, we are talking two cars per family. Okay, these are not going to be people that that have no means. Okay, so we're already short one parking spot behind the building. Secondly, there's no entrance to the rear of the facility, so people are going to be having entrance from the front. Therefore, we'll be parking on the street rather than parking in the back whenever they get the opportunity to do that. That's going to be a difficult thing because there is no opportunity to do that. Already, the parking is horrendous up there because we have this group home where we have workers driving through. I'd like to pass this around. This is a picture of the parking on that area yesterday. Yesterday? Yeah. Okay. And basically every parking spot is full. Significantly, about one door north of the facility that is being planned there, the street narrows. Now, that's not usually a big issue, but it's a foot and a half narrower there, and we have city buses and school buses going down that street, which, again, is complicated when all of the people are parked on that area. And it makes for a very tight squeeze and a very dangerous situation for cyclists. And as you know, Scotia Street has been deemed a cycling area. So, again, we don't need any more density in our parking area. The city planning department, I believe, has properly allocated this area to be R1. We as a community live in an R1 area, and we're happy with that. Okay, we would like to see this space being utilized, but we'd like to be see it utilized as R1. And therefore, as a group of the people that I've spoken with and for, we would like to see the current designation maintained, and we'd like to see the whoever's developing this stay within the R1 designation for those the properties that are there. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Pops. Councilor Eady, question? Yeah.
I think you meant to say it's an R1 street, not an R1 area, right?
It's a R1 street, that's correct. I believe it's R2 further west
right
of the street.
Yeah, Luxton is R2 and Inkster's R2.
Exactly, and they, therefore, can't take the parking overload from Scotia. Okay, so if you look at both Luxton and you look at Inkster as well, okay, they've got parking basically car to car right from Scotia all the way to St. Cross. So there's no give there. I'd also like to ask whose parking spots is going to be used for the 8 trash bins that are going to have to be put out then there, because there's now 7 parking spots behind this building, and somebody's going to have to host 4 carts and 4 recycling carts, which I understand are in the works. Another issue we need to talk about is where are they going to put their snow? Okay? They've got 7 parking spots. They're going to have.
I'm sorry. You know what? There's a lot of houses in that neighborhood who have nowhere to put snow. I'm sorry.
I think everybody in that neighborhood has to deal with that issue, but this compounds it because they've got all of their space taken up by parking spots. So they're going to have a pile of snow somewhere, which is going to take away yet one more of their parking spots, which is going to force their cars to have to be on the street.
Just so everybody knows, I grew up right there, right? So not on this particular lot. But so So you measured the street for the
Yes,
width?
We measured. It's 1.5 feet narrower right
There's
in front
a bend
of that,
in Scotia. Though,
right in front of the tree. There's a tree there that they've kind of are trying to save.
It's a bend in Scotia. It's in front of the apartment block.
Exactly. So and you'll notice that when you walk down the street there, that the sidewalk curves to that and changes, but the other sidewalk doesn't. So it's about 1.5 feet narrower at that point. We got city buses flying up there, and you've got parked cars. And it gets pretty tight there at times, and it's the parked cars, obviously, that cause the problem. And there's no room for yet more parked cars.
Okay. So are you aware that to buy a new single-family house in, say, Riverbend is around $340,000?
And the problem with
so,
that?
Well, what I'm trying to explain is you're saying $250,000 is...
How many of those homes?
Is a kind of family that actually has 2 cars. Well, I don't know that I agree with that. $250 is a substantial amount of money, but most houses are like we're running on Scotia. $250 is the price, and there's a lot of houses that don't have more than 2 parking spots per, and there's 7 parking spots. But so, like for this particular building, like is it like you're saying it doesn't fit. I know that there's a house on the corner, although it's not registered as having 3 homes in it. There's a house at the corner of Inkster that has 3 rental in it. So, and that home has no parking because there's a house behind it on the back lane. That's on the northwest corner of Inkster. But so, but for this particular building, do you think this sounds like you said stability, right? And a lot of people have lived there a long, long time there. The Blacks are still there. The Wiesenthal might still be there. I don't know. But, why do you think there's no stability with this house that's being built? Like, I don't understand your comment about stability.
I raise that because we have enjoyed a stable neighborhood there, and a fourplex in the neighborhood is not what the city plan calls for. I'd like to address the house that you're referring to with, I believe it's only one rental unit in it, which is right across the street from mine. It, too, I believe, was duplex in the 50s. To the best of my knowledge, I spoke to the owner of it today. So
it was duplex, as a young teenager of 19 years old moving out, I went to look at it when it was first set, when it was in the late 1970s when it became a duplex.
Okay, then the current owner is not up to speed on that.
The person, there was somebody renting a space in the basement as well of that house. Just so you know, I don't know if you knew that.
Well, I've been living across the street there now for 20 years, and I'm not aware that there's any more than the upstairs suite in that place. As a matter of fact, I know the occupant rather well. So again, I'm unaware of that. Okay. And yes, that compounds the problem. It compounds the parking problem. So to introduce more parking problems into our neighborhood doesn't solve the problem. Right? We have these grandfathered in areas. We've got the two places on Smithfield. We've got the apartment block. We've got this other place across the street.
I hear you. Okay. But I'm asking questions about this stability question that you're talking about. So again, like, these are homes for purchase. And when you say you say a fourplex, right?
I understand they're saying fourplex,
but when I hear fourplex, as in some people hear fourplex, they're thinking of a fourplex kind of rental place that, you know, is more like apartments, fourplex kind of thing. Like, what is you're probably just seeing these images for the first time. I don't know.
No, as a matter of fact, we're not. We've looked at these plans, and I believe that one of the other presenters will be discussing and dissecting the plan.
Okay.
But the when I think double density is what I think, when we talk where we should have two houses, we're trying to build four.
Okay. Did you know that, under R1, you can build a house with 800 square foot rental space, say, upstairs? Or on the house somewhere as well as the main house itself. Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware of that.
Somebody could build that. That's a possibility on an R1. Just under the zoning rules and stuff that's in place. So I just wanted to point that out. What's your opinion of you know, these are character streets. Like, I love Scotia. I live on Scotia. People live on Macadam. I'd live on Macadam too if I could.
Mm-hmm.
There was some new houses built there where they subdivided a 66 foot wide lot and they made them smaller lots and they built tall, thin houses.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would be fit more within this particular?
Well, the house that was there before was a three story home. So I don't think that as a neighborhood we're objecting to the height of the homes. Okay, I think what we're objecting to is the fact that there are four houses there rather than two.
Right. So So there's a double lot there. So you're aware that they could just apply for a subdivision to split the two lots, create a 110 Scotia, have a 108 Scotia, and build two thin houses. Right. You're aware of that.
Yes.
Okay. So you'd be okay.
That's two homes. As opposed to four.
Well, again, a possibility is it could be four homes, right?
There would still have to be zoning variance, and we'd be back here again.
Conditional use request for the 800 square
foot.
Secondary.
Yeah.
Okay. So there'd be a hearing on that, but
exactly.
Okay. So, but you're okay with tall.
I don't object to the property being used in a constructive way. Okay. And I think that that's not a reasonable thing for us as a neighborhood to request. But I do think that there should be some appreciation of the character of this street and the fact that it is currently zoned in this manner. And I think that the folks that are showing up today opposing this feel that this should be single-family.
I only asked it because the people on McAdam are very upset about what was built on their street. So I just
that's why we're here, that's why we're here to speak.
Okay.
Councilor Sharma?
I have a question about the rendering here.
Yep.
Just looking at, what are your thoughts on the rendering? You mentioned that someone else was going to speak to that. Just leaving out the fact that there's four units, what do you think this fits with the neighborhood, the look of this?
My wife is an interior designer, so I've seen all kinds of renderings, and, a beautiful rendering. How close that fits to reality of what actually is going to be there, I really don't know. I don't think that what's presented there looks like what the rest of that neighborhood looks like right now. It would stick out. You would see that. It would be the first thing you would see in the neighborhood. But again, I guess the aesthetics of that are something that can be addressed by someone else. I'm not qualified to discuss aesthetics.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Pops.
Hey, thank you.
Next up is Corey Bednarik. Do you wish to speak?
Yes, I'd like to
speak. Okay, please come up, state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Corey Dean Bodnarek, and I live at 106 Scotia Street. I've been living there since 1988 when we purchased the property from my grandmother, who's herself and her husband built the home in 1942. So we've basically we've had a family member that's lived on Scotia Street since we've had a home there. The reason why I'm primarily here is to focus on the concerns of my neighbors and my community. So I'd like, if you have a moment, I'd like to address 2 points. First of all, I'm extremely nervous, so if I seem like I'm stuttering and kind of agitated, that's because, well, I am. The two reasons why I'm here is, the first one is to pass out the signed petition, which I had signed by 95 members of our community, occupying 80 homes in our community. The first sheet of that petition indicates all the homes that have signed in opposition of this rezoning act. And the second reason why I'm here is to speak on the character of our community. Our community is a close-knit group of families who help one another when asked, offer assistance without being asked. Sorry. And when we need support, we are not afraid to ask. The value of our homes are not based on a parcel of land that is bought and sold on the market like a commodity at the stock exchange. The value of our homes are based on the families we raise there and the neighbors and friends that enrich our lives. Today, I hope that you honor their wishes of the 96 community members of Scotia Street and our surrounding areas that signed this petition and stop the rezoning of 108 Scotia. One of the main reasons why I'm so upset about this is because, like Dr. Pop mentioned, it was a very traumatic event for us when our neighbors, the Gooches, passed away. It was even more traumatic when they had no family members that could represent them or to identify their bodies. So the police requested the assistance of the neighbors in order to do that, which I have a plaque identifying our contributions to our neighborhood. I apologize for getting a little bit upset, so I don't have to excuse myself.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Next up, we have Peter Wolosinski. Sorry, Peter Wolosinski. Oh, okay.
Right. He won't speak.
Okay, so he's just registered in opposition. Okay. Mike Wolchuk. Okay, come on up, sir. name and address for the record.
My name is Mike Walchuk. I live at 137 Scotia Street. Unlike the applicant, I purchased property on Scotia Street with my partner this summer to move to the neighborhood with our family rather than to make money on Scotia. I run Pollock's Hardware Co-op, the community hardware store. I've been doing that for 3 years. And our purpose in the neighborhood is to raise our family and be part of the community. And my opposition for this has to do with the fact that Scotia is a house or a street full of character homes. And we purchased a house that was built in 1908. And we are the third owners of this home. And we plan on restoring it and having our family there and live there for a long time. And one of the things that you know, I have an issue with is the fact that you know, people are coming in to make money here and not to put down roots and to create a community. And a building that has four suites typically is a condominium that people will buy, first-time homeowners move within a year or two because they outgrow the space. And it's quite evident because the condominium project across the street has had a for sale sign up there since it's been developed. So it's turning over rapidly. I've been there since August 1st, and I have been unable to park my vehicle in front of my house for 3 months. There are people parked in front of my house every single day, the same two vehicles. So there's no parking for me in front of my own house. And as you know, I lived in Centennial, and one of the reasons I left Centennial was because the city gratefully put a parking meter in front of my home there and expected me to pay to park in front of my house there. So, you know, I'm interested in community, I'm interested in preservation and heritage, and this thing's an eyesore. And everyone's going to tiptoe around that issue, and it's an eyesore. It's a cookie-cutter design that you're going to see on other streets in other neighborhoods, and it's all about profit. And you know what? Sometimes people need to step up, neighbors, and say enough is enough. We came to this neighborhood to support the neighbors and create a community. And I think it's in really, really bad case of the people that, you know, came to an untimely demise there, that a profit is made on their demise. I would like to see a single family home built there with a family and honor the people that were there. The house that I purchased, the lady passed away 3 years ago at the age of 95. I bought it off the estate, and the estate was her 95-year-old brother and his 65-year-old son. And we wrote an offer to purchase this thing. They took 3 years. They wouldn't sell it because they were afraid that it would get torn down and developed. And we wrote an offer, and the man wouldn't agree to sell us the home till he met us and got confirmation from us personally that we would keep this as a single-family home and raise our family there. And that's all I really want to bring forward, is that sometimes profit can be made in places where profit needs to be made, but this is the Wellington Crescent of the North End. And if we start tearing houses down to build these things, and I mean, it's unfortunate the lot came up in this way, and otherwise we wouldn't be here, but this sets a precedent. I have a 300-foot lot on Scotia, and I don't think my neighbor Henry Pops would be very happy if I decided to build a big, big building there. And I mean, guys like me, we're young, we have money, we have ability, we can build projects like that. This is going to open the door, and I'd like to close it. Thank you.
Any questions?
Yes,
sir. You have a question. Hold on, Mr. Wong. Councillor Eady?
Yeah, I have several questions, actually. So you're aware there is no house on this lot, right?
Yeah.
Or on either lot. There's two lots there, technically. Technically, every other house on that block has 33 feet frontage or less. So it's not uncommon to have two separate little lots. You mentioned one house. You're okay with building two one houses on?
No, actually, I'm not, Ross. I'm opposed to it entirely. My lot is a 50-foot lot. My neighbors, both their lots are significantly wider than mine. Okay.
So my next question is, you live on the odd number, right? You're on the riverside of Scotia? You know that the price value, do you know the price value differences between Riverside and the west side of Scotia?
Well, I'm quite aware of the prices on Scotia.
Right. So those lots on the Riverside are all bigger than the west side lots, most for the most part. And I'm just pointing this stuff out to you that the last house that I know of that sold on the Riverside, except for yours, I don't know what you paid for yours, but I know further up Scotia near Belmont, there's a house that sold for over $500,000. Whereas on the west side of Scotia, I tried to get them to up my assessment value because I didn't feel that my house was properly assessed at such a low value to 290, and I was told no, it's 245. So I live on a 6,000 something square foot lot with a 1,400 square foot home. So those are the price differences. So really I'm leading to another question, which is, do you believe that people who buy a home on Scotia, say in even this new building, don't want to live on a really nice street and set roots in the community on Scotia Avenue? Like you're talking about the developer, but eventually somebody's going to buy these homes, right?
Well, sure they will. But
so what's your answer to that? They're going to buy these homes and they believe in Scotia and they're going to set roots down there.
And they're going to live there.
And they're going to find out it's a great community.
They're going to live there for 2 years and realize that there's nowhere for them to walk to have a dog, because everybody on Scotia has one or two dogs. And it's going to turn over. Like, it's going to be...
I don't have a dog.
You're one of few, because there's lots of dogs. Anyways, I don't get what you're getting at price. I paid $220 for my house on Scotia, and you know what? There's houses on Scotia for less money that aren't selling. Yeah. Like, it's not a money thing. Like, I know,
right.
I know people right now
a home on Scotia,
that would buy that lot and build a single family.
Buying a home on Scotia, right? That's what they're looking for, to buy a home on Scotia. Is that correct?
They're looking to buy single family homes on Scotia.
No, you know what? If somebody builds something, they're going to sell it to somebody.
Oh, yeah, but we're here to prevent that from happening.
I'm just trying to explain to you, you're submitting some arguments that I'm just questioning on, because
I mean, people will buy anything you build. If the price is right, they will buy it. I mean,
and you don't think they'll want to live on Scotia, right?
Well, I'm not saying they won't want to live.
What you're saying
there.
Is you're building this concept that you have, you're thinking your fourplex, so you're thinking people are going to, this is a transient kind of building. But it sounds like they're trying to build a home here, right?
Oh, no, maybe they will. I can't judge who's going to move in there, who's not. I'm just thinking as a community, like, this sets a precedent, and every single house not that every single house will get developed, but it's going to open the door. So next thing you know, another little house that's a small house on a lot is going to get bought by a developer. It's going to get torn down. We're going to be back at this table again. So here's our opportunity as a community to say, listen, we don't want fourplexes on Scotia. It doesn't fit the neighborhood. You could build anything there and they will buy it, Ross. I mean, we know that. Everybody, you know, not that everybody wants to live on Scotia, but I've spent my whole life planning to live on Scotia, and I was able to do it this summer after many, many hard years of work to get there. And, you know, sure, I bought a house for a very good price, but I have to spend another 100 or two on it to make it into something. And, you know...
But you just said you bought a house, right, on Scotia, because you wanted to live on Scotia.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that the person who bought a home at 108 Scotia, as it's proposed by the developer, didn't plan to get there their whole life too?
Oh, I'm not saying they don't. I'm questioning the project. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's the right project for Scotia. Right. A fourplex on Scotia doesn't suit the neighborhood.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Welchuk, thank you very much. Next up is Judy Myers.
Burns,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You wish to speak or just be registered in office?
I'm Patrick Henry. I prefer to Judy Washington. She has more notes than I do.
She's on the list. I'll call her up.
If I want to speak. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if I make any points, I'm sorry. That's all right. I hear reading.
Okay.
Okay, welcome, Ms. Burns. Just state your name and address for the record, please.
Okay, my name is Judy Burns. I live at 186 St. Cross Street, which is about a block from the zoning variance notice on Scotia. I don't have a speech as such, just some observations. First of all, about myself, I'm a 35-year resident of the community, and I've been an active resident, chairing committees for play structures in the community park, lobbied the provincial government for homeowner grants when it looked like we were going to be dropped, and I presently chair the North Winnipeg Parkway, still to be completed, and I'm a member of the provincial planning committee for the bicentennial celebrations for 1812, the arrival of Selkirk settlers in my neighborhood. My activities as an activist have brought over $7 million to the Luxton neighborhood, so I feel I have credentials to speak with the Scotia residents. I'm a bit concerned the apartments that were brought up as examples of apartments in the neighborhood. As Dr. Fox already mentioned, the one across the street was built in 1914. The two further up Scotia Street, which are actually in West Kildonan and not the Luxton neighborhood, built in the 20s. It's not in property assessment showing that. I actually have a friend living across the street who told me the history of them. They're across from the bishops of the Catholic Ukrainian Palace. Bishop's Palace, and at times have housed individuals who are involved with the administration of the Ukrainian church there. And my concern is that these buildings are part of the heritage of the neighborhood, and as a consequence, are not modern examples of fourplexes or multiplexes that fit well in the neighborhood. I'm quite convinced, had this group been around in 1914 or in 1920, we would probably oppose those being built as well. So we are, as was previously pointed out, we're very much a family neighborhood. Councillor Pagdacan will recall the last community committee that was here. There was quite a few meetings in this room about apartments on Bannerman Avenue. So you know already how strongly our community feels about itself. In preparing to come tonight, I took a look at what used to be the Plan Winnipeg, is now the Winnipeg Plan, and it's a little bit too general to find specifics to apply, but I'd like to take a couple of quotes from the section on neighborhoods, page 54 of the first book, that new housing built in the neighborhood should be flexible enough to reflect the unique identity and character of each neighborhood. I would suggest that this particular home does not meet that criteria, these four homes that are being built. Something that hit a nerve with me was that there should be green space to accommodate extra families coming into a neighborhood. The building of this fourplex was motivated by the fact that there are many people moving into the province, 10,000 a year, mostly immigrants, I believe. Luxton already welcomes many immigrants, but we do have trouble accommodating children with our green space, since we have only a postage stamp at the Luxton Community Center. So please bear that in mind when you're boosting neighborhoods population. Page 56 of the Winnipeg Plans is protect existing character of neighborhood. Well, the neighborhood is R2 with the occasional illegal R3, as it turns out. Page 53 says, I'm not quite sure what this means, but I think it's relevant, contextually sensitive. That a new building has to be in context with its immediate neighbors. And then there's even a new word for me in this chapter, intensification. That is the density of the population. And I would say doubling the population in that tight space does not bring any quality to the neighborhood or these other words that we used. If the Winnipeg plan is to be meaningful, you have to bear in mind this criteria. And I think I'll just conclude saying that while I think it's a very pretty building, it's too large. The 35-foot center point of the roof is higher than the largest building except for the apartment block that's there. And in truth, the new builds we'd have in the neighborhood, probably less than a dozen in the last decade, mostly from homes burning or just becoming wrecks. There's been a few habitat homes. They're not intergenerational. They've got that cheap vinyl siding. You know, it's not been a success for us having new developments. So ask for sensitivity when people want to build in what I would regard as a heritage neighborhood, not just put something that looks like it's going to make profit there. And, I mean, even having said that, there's a home across the street. I know the family well. They built just this year. And quite honestly, that house looks as though the men in black have landed. It looks like a spaceship. So, you know, you've got to take seriously the sensitivity, you know. No, I love the family, but by God, that architecture. Anyway, thank you for your attention.
Of course, just 1 second, Ms. Bruce. Okay. Thank you very much, Councillor.
You're aware that if there was a single home built on here, they can build it 35 feet high, right, to the peak? You know that, right? There's no conditional use or anything.
Okay, how required. High would you figure the eaves?
This particular one here, this building here, they're talking at the center, is 30 feet.
No.
I've
read this. It's 35 in the center, where the peak of the roof goes up.
The applicant has told me that from the eave to the peak, halfway up that distance, the house will be 30 feet high.
30.
The zone allows 35 feet at that same location, from the eaves to the peak. So when you get to the peak, if you build a 35 in the middle of the roof, your peak could be much higher. So he is below what the R1 zone allows.
Yeah, so if a single home was built on this, if two single homes were built on a subdivided lot, they could be 35 feet high. The other question I had is, like, you're aware that new building material isn't going to look like the old building material, right? Would you agree with that statement?
New building material
doesn't look like...
But I have no objection to using old building material in appropriate situations.
Right. I'm just asking the question, though. You're quite aware, no matter what new building you build, the material looks different than the old stuff, for the most part.
Yes.
Okay. The other question I have is, do you think that this... You've seen there's some pretty big center hall homes throughout between the parks area. Do you feel that a house that was built there that looked like a large center hall plan building, do you think that would fit in terms of its look, for example? You know, given that new building material is not going to look exactly like.
I'm not calling for any particular designation. I'm opposing R4. I'm not opposed to rentals in the area. I'm not opposed to condos in the area. It's the hulking size of this and the fact that, I mean, there's a very charming house to the north of this lot, and it will have this, you know, looming property right next to it, whereas the old house was not centered, but it was more centered.
Well, as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, But the house that was the biggest on that, between Luxton and Inkster on the west side, was the house that burnt down. All those other homes, correct me if I'm wrong, they're all, I think, maximum 1.5 stories. Is that right? They're all pretty small. They're not big houses.
Many have two stories.
They're not big houses. Is one of them two stories?
Oh, many have two stories.
Many of them are two stories.
Small two stories, all right?
No, large
two stories. Large two stories?
Mm-hmm. The reason why that was three stories is because the doctor's property and he had his office on the top floor. Yeah. And the reason why it's technically a single lot is because there was a barn that was occupying that vacant space that is now classified as the second lot. It's only one lot. It's a 66-foot
lot. It was two lots when they divided up the land for this particular area of the city. It was two lots. Even when the barn was on, it was two lots. Just so you...
That's why part of the application.
Anyway, sorry, we're talking out there. I'm asking Ms. Burns some questions up. So you just feel that this particular proposal is just too big? Would you be against the kind of homes, like single-family homes that code, you're okay with two of them on there?
Okay.
Would that be your preference?
I think this word intensification applies, that you're now looking at putting 8 bedrooms where there was probably a 4-bedroom home. I mean, I don't know how people share their bedrooms, how many go in, but I would say that's inviting density where there wasn't density before. I didn't want to repeat arguments that were made to you before, but Dr. Potts did mention that the road narrows there, and it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, even when you compare it to where the fourplexes are by the Bishop's Palace, which is a good wide sweep of road right there, it's just too much for that lot. And being a 6-foot side clearance, and the houses on either side are on fairly small lots, they have probably 4 feet, so that gives you 10 feet from one building to the next. So it's a big blank wall inside the house. It's not neighbor friendly, in my view.
Are you
no windows?
Are you familiar with 41.5 Inkster and 41 Inkster?
Yes.
Of course, there's only 4 feet between both houses.
Yes.
So it's common to have no, like, those houses have no windows on one house and the other has a window. So you're telling me that doesn't exist anywhere else in the neighborhood and that's a reason not to build this particular?
We've inherited that problem. That house is probably about 90 years old. I have a friend who lives at 41.5 Inkster, and it's a very nicely well-kept home, I know that.
It is, yeah.
It's not landlord-owned. I mean, and that is a problem that's not even come up,
I'm just pointing out to you, though, that throughout the neighborhood there are places where people are looking at walls, right? Anyway, are you aware that the side yard of 6 feet is actually 2 feet wider than the zoning requirements?
But proportional to the actual building, that's quite narrow. I mean, 6 foot would be a lot for my house, but not for a house that size.
So the largeness of this house, it seems like it's a wide house, and it goes back a ways. On the lot, so what you're saying is it's large because of its width and depth, not because of its height, right?
Okay.
Because its height is basically the same height as the...
It's large, okay, because of its width. The setback has to be the same as the other houses, so there's no argument there, mm-hmm. at least as far as I know.
The setback's there.
And, I mean, I'm not even going to start on the back and 7 parking spaces. I mean, I just can't imagine how horrible that would be. I mean,
it's 8.5 feet wide.
You know, I mean, I used to have a neighbor with 4 boys and they all parked in the back, and boy, that was enough, you know.
That would be the demi.
Yes,
So, and you know, you have parking issues all around your particular part of the neighborhood as well. But so I'm just trying to. What I'm really trying to get at here is, you keep talking about it's big. The house at 106, and you know, this the gentleman I respect, he tried to make a presentation, and I don't know if we'd invite him back up, but I'd like to actually hear from
him. I hope you do.
But is that not a two-story house?
Which house is that? His house?
106 Scotia.
It's smaller, isn't it? It's
one
small.
And a half story.
Yeah.
It is one and a half.
Yeah.
The, 112
the
one, is a two-story
The one
house?
To the north is
one and
a beautiful
half.
Example
one and a half, right.
Of a, I would say, an 80-year-old home with a beautiful turret.
So two out of the five houses on that street are one and a half stories. The house at the corner of Inkster and Scotia.
One and a half stories.
Pardon me?
Okay, sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen.
They're all one and a half stories. I just want to clarify. Somebody gave me evidence. I just want to clarify because somebody gave me evidence that that they're all two-story houses on that block. The majority.
They're one and a half.
Well, right. One and a half. Right.
So from Luxton to Inkster on that very same block on the west side, they're all pretty well one and a half story houses. Is that correct? See, the problem is, you know, I grew up there and I remember running around in these yards, so they are one and a half story. Okay, I just wanted to confirm that. But technically, with the zoning the way it is now and conditions, you could build two-story houses. I guess they built one and a half story, and it was an opportunity to expand for bedrooms or whatever. It was probably an attic, I don't know. But I'm just trying to make sure we understand all this stuff. So in this particular block, what you're saying is this two-story house will be bigger than the rest of the houses on this block. Is that
right? Yes.
Because the Black's house is an awfully big house, too, with a huge setback. But would you agree that that's a huge house?
Well, there's an elegance about a single-family home.
Yes, I understand that. But I'm just saying
but
the look of
a
it,
a fourplex
right?
is always going to be a fourplex.
Well, no, but the size, right? Let's go back
to the
size. Let's go back to the size. Because what you quoted from me is, does the home fit on the street, right? So that's a huge house, right? So
150 feet.
Yeah, it's about 100 feet
no, it's four
setback.
It's 437 and a half foot blocks.
Okay. Anyway, I just say there are some really big homes on Scotia. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Burns. Appreciate that. Okay. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I was being a little lenient there, but technically you're not supposed to speak unless your name's been called up. So please, just try and you'll have a chance to speak, and if you know, I'll call. If you want to speak for information, you'll get a chance as well. Okay. I'm just going to go back to the gentleman who.
Oh, please do.
Had a chat. Yeah. So, what was your name?
No,
again?
From 106.
From 106.
Scotia. Yes.
Scotia.
Could you please come?
Can we sit at the table or?
Yes, please. Come back.
First of all, I apologize for getting emotional.
Well, I think you
okay,
can.
Hold on. Just one second.
Can you not come back?
The clerk's just providing some advice to me, but.
I can leave.
No. Just hold on a second. Yeah. Technically, you're not really supposed to come back. We were supposed to, that means we'd have to reopen delegations for everybody. I'm thinking you wanted to say some more.
No. Actually, I said everything I wanted to. I was waiting for any kind of cross
right,
reference.
But
I just
have, a question.
But yeah, Councillor Edie didn't have a chance to answer.
So reopen delegations for who? For anyone else that already spoke?
It's just that they have their opportunity.
Yeah, okay, so we're not asking you anywhere. You're not going to get... So, Councillor Edie,
I missed the opportunity to ask a question.
So you'll just get a chance to answer his question.
That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, actually, there's two questions related to the same thing. Were you the one who went all up and down Scotia and did the petition?
Yes, I'm the one that dropped off the petitions up and down Scotia as well, posted a petition board on my property.
Okay. Then my next question, that's why I wanted you to come back up, because I think you're the only person I can talk to about this. These people who signed the petition... They were just told it was a fourplex. Would you agree with that?
You have the petition in front of you. It's basically written out that it's indicating that we are concerned about spot zoning. We are concerned about we do have an eclectic area in the neighborhood. And was there indication in the actual petition whether it was going to be developed into a fourplex or just a on multiple? Your concern about the rezoning from R1M to R2.
There was no indication that it was. You're correct.
So there was a verbal thing. So yeah. Anyway, the only person I know who signed the petition, and you're citing that as evidence, was verbally presented, talked about a fourplex, and right away was conjured in that person's mind that. They were building an apartment block.
Okay. First of all,
so I just want to ask you a question. Do you think that all these people who signed the petition would have sort of visualized in their head some kind of fourplex apartment rental kind of thing?
The board that's posted outside of the property of 108 Scotia Street indicates that it's four dwellings that we're planning on putting there. So I personally, believe it or not, when I was passing out the petitions, I did that on purpose, that I purposely put them into the mailboxes for people to read the petition. It was just a simple petition. I never actually did door-to-door solicitation because I have a tendency to be more energetic than normal. So what I decided to do was that I decided to let people make their own decisions, and they were given the option to drop the petition off in my mailbox or sign the petition that I had posted on a poster board outside of my house. There was some other people from our group that did go door to door for us.
So there were other people. It's not just you. Okay,
that is correct.
Do you know if any of those people will be coming to?
One was sitting right beside me, and she still has to present her. Her argument.
Great.
Is that the only question you have, or do you have one more?
That's all.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Kathleen Youngson, you wish to speak?
No, I don't.
Registered in opposition. Okay. Dudley Thompson, do you wish to speak? Okay. Name and address for the record, please.
Dudley Thompson, 61 Scotia. Speak. And I'm in opposition. I guess you know a lot of what's been stated is quite clear. I think the only thing I'm going to really talk about is I guess scale and mass of the building. And I think Ross, you've asked some questions about the building and the Black House. Yeah, the Black House is a good example, and I went and measured it more or less, and it's about 1,400 square feet on a floor, like the floor plate. The proposed one is 2,600, so it's not quite half. The proposed one is almost double. So if you get a sense of the floor plate, it's huge, and it's on a 66-foot lot. The Black House is on a 150-foot lot.
Width or depth?
Width along yeah. Scotia.
Width.
Yeah. So you get a sense of this.
More like 300 and something.
It could be, but you get a sense of this large building, very large lot. So yeah, and it is a big house, but it's probably about half the mass of what's being proposed on the other side of the street on a 66-foot wide lot. So it's a whole different sense of scale there. I moved into the neighborhood in 1988, and we built our own house, and I designed the one next to it. We moved a little house. We did a little activity there. And my house is on a 38-foot lot. It's 1,400 square feet. So it's a very narrow lot. It's not much wider than the 33-foot lots that are here, and it's a single-family house, and it has all of the various character. And I think what we're saying here, we all moved into the area not because it's not a suburban neighborhood or it's not, but because of the eclectic nature of what's here. I mean, I think a lot of heritage houses, a lot of character houses, and some new houses that have some variety and some difference to them. But I think the thing that is important is that there's a sense of scale, and I think this proposed house, the proposed fourplex that's being planned, is just a way too large. And you made a good point that yes, this could be a single family home on this lot with being very legal, and they wouldn't even be here today.
Yeah, you can build a 5,000 square foot home.
That's right. But I think the reality of anybody spending $1 million on a non-river lot on the other side and building it for this, 5,000 square feet, is probably not going to happen. And if it happens, I mean, that's we live with that. But I think that the realities are that's not going to happen. So I think there are a lot of houses in the neighborhood. The big ones are like 1,000 square feet on a floor plate, right? So this one is 2.5 times that. So it's a big massive house. And yes, the roof line is under the. I mean, I just did a little sketch, overlaid it on top of the, what's there. When you think of this house being 57 feet wide, it's almost 1.5 times the width. And so the roof mass is equally as large. You know, so it's a big house. And I mean, I personally, if the developers decided to split it into two lots and put two single-family homes on there, on 33-foot lots, I mean, I'm not opposed to that. In the neighborhood, I think they can do some very nice homes that can be built on that configuration. That's something the community can decide. But I just think I don't think it needs to be this scale to work in the community. And I think that the developers could do a very nice job with other configurations.
All right, so. Any questions from the Thompson?
Yeah.
So, Eddie, what?
Just because you are an architect, I know you're here as a resident, but
You're
an architect. Do you think that this big home that you're talking about could be designed to look like a center hall?
Well, I guess, sure. I mean, you can do anything, but I think, again, you know, if it's designed for, you know, the two big suites, like these are big 1,300 square foot suites, so there's, or units, whatever.
1,200,
okay. So there's four of those, so there's 5,000 square feet. I mean, I think the massing is, no matter how you package it, it's still going to be a very, very big home. Going to be 1.5 times the size of the black home on the other side of the street, which again is on this massive lot. So you just, you know, think about how that's done. I mean, if to do this as a nice threeplex or duplex, that could work fine, probably. I think it's just like they're just pushing the boundaries, and it's a financial thing. But I mean, I can't believe that lot is worth as much money as it appears to be in order to have to put a fourplex on it to make money.
Well, actually, if you built the four dwellings on there, it would be a $1 million house, right? But
yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, but so you did measurements. Can I ask you this? Like, I don't know, but that 10-suite apartment block, like, do you know what the square footage? Like, I know it's three stories, but like. Do you know the size of that building?
I have no idea, but you know, I think as Judy pointed out, I mean, it was built in 1908 or whatever, and obviously different standards, different.
Well, yeah, actually, that apartment block was. I grew up on Lux when until I was 12 years old. I lived on Luxton, and there was somebody still living in there a very long time, and you know, that apartment block was a prestigious place to live.
Sure, but I bet
when it was built, right? Like that was the, you know. Thing that was the it place to live is that apartment.
I bet to go back in the city hall records and find out how that was decided upon. And
but I'm just saying, like that's what I had heard from people who lived there. But did you check the size of the other multifamily buildings on Scotia? The two at Smithfield.
Oh, the little apartments there.
Yeah, they're pretty small, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty. Yeah, but again,
I'm just curious what the size. Like you're talking about scale, right? So I'm just trying to get a sense of. Scale, the big, like I guess I the biggest know. Buildings on there are that apartment block and then the two at Smithfield.
That's right.
Oh, well, actually the Catholic diocese there or whatever it is that's in that building, that's the biggest building on Scotia. Well, it's pretty huge, but and it used to be lived in, right? So you don't know the size of this building?
I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Thompson. Next up is Markian Jureniak. Do you wish to speak?
Sure, briefly.
All right. Another Markian. Name and address for the record.
Markian Jureniak, Winona Heights, Scotia. I just wanted to agree with a lot of the comments that Dudley said on scale. That's what I was hoping to speak with, so I don't have to repeat a lot of that word. I would concur with the comment that Councillor Edie said regarding the McAdam residents that object to those two new houses, and it's to me it's an issue of scale. It's trying to squeeze density into a lot, and this is what I see happening here with this property. I live at 108 Scotia, the house that eloquently designed by previous presenter here.
By the spaceship.
But so really, I developed the property for myself.
It's pretty far setback, right? It's a pretty far setback.
It,
what's your setback?
The setback.
You're like 100 feet back.
I'm 100 feet back, basically built over the footprint of the previous house that was there.
Which is on the riverbank.
I've met all the zoning bylaws in terms of alignment by lining the front garage.
Okay.
But really, I tried to develop the design respecting scale. And the neighborhood is eclectic. There's houses of different sizes, as there's lots of different widths. There's very large houses, there's very large buildings, but in my opinion, those are built on lots that have a lot of breathing room, there's a lot of space. They don't seem squeezed in. And looking at this design, I would like to have seen the rendering extend to the two neighboring houses, where I think this is going to squeeze right in and dwarf the others. Your question regarding density or the size of the apartment or the condominiums, that 10.
Your next door neighbor, yeah.
Yeah, 105 Scotia.
No, that's not 105.
Yeah.
It's 105.
All right, okay.
There's 10 units in there. They're about 600 square feet each.
So that's 6,000 square feet.
Probably closer to 8,000 with circulation.
Well, with the middle, yeah, it's still got the centers there, though. Okay. Are you familiar with, like, we talk about construction styles and stuff and certain looks. Like, your house has a certain look. Are you familiar with the 1967-100 anniversary of Canada's house that was, Expo 67 house that was built on Scotia? Are you familiar with that property? It's,
you're talking about the one...
It's close to Lansdowne in Scotia.
Yes, and I know the residents, too.
Would you say that house, that doesn't really fit the style of Scotia, does it?
You know, I'm not talking about style.
Like, okay. You're talking size, okay.
I'm talking about scale and depth and mass.
Okay.
That house there is a very interesting house.
Yeah, but it's only a single, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's different style, though. This house here is probably somewhat different style, but you're saying it's the massive size. Okay.
It's about squeezing that mass into that lot.
Okay.
Question for you.
Yes.
You are an architect, is that correct?
Yes, registered architect in Manitoba.
Okay. What's your sense? Okay, so other than the scale, what do you think about the style? And if such a building were to be built, what ought to it look like?
Well, I would say that are you talking about materials and finishes? Like, there's many things you could talk about. I'll begin with.
Council E was talking about center plan. Center hall plan. You could talk about Tudor style. You could talk about, you know, someone mentioned about a historical, you know, it's a historical street. So, you know, what would you say relative to that information?
Well, in my opinion, it's pretty bland design, generic. You know, I'm not saying that the house on there has to be historical in character. I would say that the massing of it could be broken down to a scale that's more in character with the adjoining properties, not a blank front. And really, the house is all about the front facade. The sides are different materials.
Appreciate your opinion.
Thank you.
This is the first time I saw this rendering, by the way.
Okay, super. Thanks, Mr. Uranyak. Gary Charlton.
I'll
you wish to speak?
I'll keep it.
Okay, you registered in opposition. Allison Slesser.
Opposition.
Okay. Carolyn Nance. Judy Washley Solis, you wish to speak?
Briefly.
Okay. Welcome back to City Hall. And
thank you.
Name and address for the record, please.
Judy Washley Solis, 59 Bannerman. Thank you, councillors, for hearing us all this late hour. First of all, I wanted to say that I didn't sign the petition, and I'm going to present a position that might not be in full opposition with the group here, but it does lead to asking you to put on hold or to reverse this recommendation until a plan is in place. And I wanted to say that I called Ross Eady, my counselor, not to lobby or influence him, but in fact to figure out how this recommendation fit with the planning that is done at City Hall, and whether or not there was any congruence between it and our Winnipeg, and I'll have more to say about that. And I did want to thank Karen and Corey and others who did so much work mobilizing the community. I think it's rather important that we encourage our citizens to speak up and express their concerns about their own neighborhoods. That's the life that gives life to our communities. I wasn't planning to present or to even take a position. In fact, when I first read the big notice and the petition on front of 108 Scotia, I said, it's just people complaining about high density and intensification and infill housing. And I'm not in the neighborhood, but directly. I mean, 159 Bannerman is just down the street. I feel part of that bigger neighborhood, but I don't have the same kind of vested interests in the neighborhood as the folks you've just heard from. And I was reluctant to present because I'm not opposed to increasing density. And I do want to see policies in place that move Winnipeg from a perception of urban sprawl to a more compact city. But upon careful reflection of the issues and doing a lot of research and delving more into our Winnipeg, I came to the conclusion that 108 Scotia and the issues around it are really a microcosm of a problem that is actually hurting, not helping, our objective to try to move the city towards more integration and intensification. I've come across too many examples of late where citizens feel that they are faced with a zoning change that is contrary to their notion of what's good about their neighborhood and what's important about it and about character, and then they express their opposition and they immediately get accused of being NIMBYers or followers of the not in my backyard phenomenon. Changing visions and directions of a city is always tough, and there will always be naysayers. And there will always be people who are truly chronic NIMBY types. But I don't believe that the reaction from folks on Scotia Street is a NIMBY phenomenon. I do believe that people are concerned about the character and viability of the neighborhood. Not so much, and I don't want to put words in their mouths, but I don't think it's fear of density or a desire to exclude certain sectors of the population from their neighborhood. As you've heard and can see, we are a very eclectic group with very mixed backgrounds in terms of income and professions and desires. So I think it's important to not categorize any of this in terms of not in my backyard. But I think to understand that they are raising legitimate concerns about the planning process and how decisions are made. And density is really not the problem, I don't think. It's how this issue is dealt with by the city. And whether or not the city is leading and shaping development rather than simply reacting to market-led proposals. So in my work around this issue, I found many questions that weren't answered and why I came here in supposed opposition to this proposal. Is this recommendation for 108 Scotia part of a neighborhood plan that residents have helped to develop? I don't think so. The last plan, and I went through the internet, was in 2002, the Seven Oaks St. John's Luxton plan, and it didn't talk about rezoning or density. But it was an important neighborhood plan for enhancing the neighborhood. And then I said, does this flow from our Winnipeg? And I didn't get a clear answer from Ross when I called him, and when I read the document, I didn't get a clear answer. In fact, there's nothing definitive in our Winnipeg about this neighborhood, and there's really nothing definitive in terms of older, established, mature neighborhoods like this area we're talking about. Other than to say, and I brought pages out of our Winnipeg to refer to, that there might be limited opportunities for integration and intensification in mature neighborhoods, and that areas of stability should be enhanced and celebrated in terms of their uniqueness. There's also a phrase in here that says we should encourage density and mixed use in most new developments, but it doesn't talk about old developments, old neighborhoods, and it doesn't talk about planning on a house-by-house, property-by-property basis. And I say to you today that I think when the group mentions in their petition the word spot zoning, that's the heart of the matter. It's a question of responding to a developer's proposal, a market-led proposal, as opposed to a vision that the city of Winnipeg has laid out in terms of that neighborhood or any other neighborhood like it. And I think it leads to this changing of a neighborhood in a very stealthful way. It's, you know, if you change it from one property from an R1 to an R2, and before you know it, the next person that comes along and there's the precedent set, and it's really changed by stealth, and it's duplicitous and underhanded, and it's not involved the community. So I don't know much about design, and I'm not here to comment on the look of it and what is, you know, except that I hear what the residents are saying in terms of the character of the neighborhood. I know what it's like to buy a house in the area and be asked by the original owners and builders to swear on a stack of Bibles that you'll never change the house in any dramatic way in order to be lucky enough to buy the house. That was certainly my case. But I think what's really important is that planning should be done on the basis of community involvement, with community support. And I just think it doesn't make sense. And I feel that you're in an awful position to have to make decisions in a vacuum without the benefit of a neighborhood plan that people support. And I suggest to you that you need to go back to demand that kind of planning happen, that there be, I know it's a big task, but we begin a neighborhood-by-neighborhood planning process. And if, in fact, it's the recommendation of the city to change a street from R1 to R2, then put it on the table up front and have the debate, let the community participate and give their input and make a decision based on that feedback. Final point I would make is that I, in all of my research, didn't sense that even if there was a plan in place and subdivision was in line and conditional changes were in line with that plan, that we've got the guidelines in place to deal with visual impact, that we have guidelines in place to deal with noise and servicing and infrastructure issues, that we're really prepared for building a city that is in line with community support, with aesthetic issues, and with the collective tradition of the neighborhood. That's my piece.
Thank you. Councilor Eady?
I have a couple questions on. I did a little research to find out how R1 and R2 were kind of created. It's neither here nor there, but as I understand it, the process that was decided whether Inkster was R2 or Luxton was R2 versus Bannerman being R1, which from St. Cross to Scotia, for example, versus from St. Cross to Main Street, it's R2. Other than my understanding of, well, this gets to my question. Are you familiar with the idea? Well, no, let me step back first. R Winnipeg was a huge consultation which the city of Winnipeg was awarded.
Yes.
It's great, extensive participation by Winnipeggers in what the city should do, right? So that was a huge process. It wasn't directly at the community level, and yes, you're right, there is no secondary plan that I'm aware of for the Between the Parks neighborhoods. There's two neighborhoods, three neighborhoods defined within those parks. And neither is there a plan for those neighborhoods. And some of those neighborhoods are slightly different than each other. But Scotia runs through all three of those neighborhoods. Well, shouldn't say that. St. Cross runs through part of one, but technically it's just a continuation when it comes right down to through to Scotia. So, but are you familiar with the concept of, like, you made it sound like our Winnipeg is new on some stuff, but are you familiar with density design that talks about building more density at busier, like, feeder streets and at corners of streets and that sort of stuff? Are you familiar with that kind of
design?
Yes,
I am. And I, as I said at the outset of my remarks, I certainly support planning that leads our city from a sprawling city to one that is more compact, where we develop in existing and older neighborhoods. And so I was surprised that our Winnipeg didn't really grapple with the question of density and intensification in older, stable, mature neighborhoods. There's quite a section in terms of downtown and core area, but when it comes to how do you apply that notion, A, it's not fleshed out in the plan, and B, it's not addressed in terms of older neighborhoods. So therefore, people who participated in the process didn't really have an opportunity to express their views one way or the other on it. And I don't think neighborhoods like Luxton, St. John's, Seven Oaks, as well as any other older established neighborhoods, had a chance to actually grapple with this topic. And I think we need to find a way to do that.
How about, are you familiar with, would you say that West Broadway and Wolseley are similar older neighborhoods?
I think so, although the tradition in West Broadway and Wolseley has been different in terms of development.
So we've heard, somebody mentioned one hearings that happened here in this committee room when Councillor Pakistan. I've sat through a number of hearings and talked where much discussion about density and people's perspective of how density should be achieved in older neighborhoods. And again, that particular design that I was talking to you about, which is where you develop density at basically intersections and kind of feeder street and regional mm-hmm. street areas, okay? So just so you know, mm-hmm. so I've heard those kind of things, and as city councils, we hear these things, and so we develop sort of an idea in our own heads what we think density is, and you're right. Community should be an important part, and of course I'm glad we're hearing from the community here, because mm-hmm. for me this is not an easy decision to make, but anyway, I just wanted to just question on those two things, and what is a substantial renovation of a house? Like, you changed the inside of your house. Uh-huh, did you still meet the requirements of the owner?
Yeah, absolutely.
You made a better change. Don't get me wrong. It's a better. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No. Okay. It's a good question.
Yeah. So
Olga Yoriniuk would be smiling down at us from heaven or not? I think so. Yeah,
but so this question is, I'm going to just ask you this, because you are presenting. You're in opposition. Yes or no?
Based on what I've said, I think you have to say no and go back to the planning board. You have to go back to a proper process and have a rationale. If as city councillors you believe Scotia Street should be an R2, which then takes away one of the stumbling blocks in terms of this project, then it's upfront and on the table for the citizens of the area to respond to. I that's my main point here. So is if I believe in citizen input and urban planning based on that kind of participation and involvement, then I it takes me to the conclusion that you'd have to stop or halt or kill this proposal until you've got that plan in place.
Anyway, I will tell you that the city has a very specific plan in regards to this neighborhood. As I explained, Scotia's R1, Bannerman's R1, Inkster's an R2. All of these streets are basically R2 between St. Cross and Main Street. Do you see the pattern there?
I see a pattern, but until
so they're
until
saying
City
density
Hall,
should be closer to Main Street.
I think what
is that
the plan of the city have to come forward with a plan that pulls together all those pieces and presents a proposal that either builds on the pattern or puts forward a new.
So you're recommending a secondary plan for.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks.
No question.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Wasilich-Leach. We've got three more registered speakers for the in opposition. Karen Gregory,
yes.
You wish to speak?
All
right.
I do.
Name and address for the record, please.
My name is Karen Gregory. I'm at 1.5 Scotia. I have here a rendering of the actual scale of the building relative to the adjacent properties. And I'm sure everybody can see it.
Can you describe it a little bit for me?
Yes. I live in a Victorian home that was built in 1907. The roof eave of the proposed building is at the peak, the very peak of my house.
You're one tall, sorry.
Yes. And also, it's actually a little bit above the house at 106 Scotia, and it is pretty much out of scale with the rest of the properties. I mean, for your information, Ross, I'm the one that knocked on your door and spoke with your wife.
I'll have a question.
Okay. And we did take this with us when we walked. We did take this rendering with us because it's true, it's to scale. So, professionally, I'm a sustainable building specialist. That's what I do. I with Stantec, I work with our Winnipeg. I understand the intentions. I was asked by Patty Regan to take part in the city's look at procurement and in the workshops. So I'm well acquainted and very supportive of what's happening with our Winnipeg. I will speak specifically to the proposed site and what it's like to live on this location on Scotia Street. Directly across the street from the proposed development is an existing 10-unit condominium and a somewhat dilapidated Victorian that faces Luxton. The street actually narrows in front of 112 Scotia, as you're well aware of by now. The property, the street accommodates city bus route, school buses, motorists, and bicyclists. The street is designated as a snow route in the winter with an overnight parking ban. The back lane is narrow and garbage trucks do occasionally hit the pole supporting the power lines directly behind the property, which is my home and also the proposed home. So this is the back lane and this is the pole that regularly gets hit by the garbage trucks. There's already problems there. I have reviewed the drawings and produce the proposed fourplex in context with the existing streetscape. The proposed building is imposing, out of scale, and unsympathetic to the adjacent properties. There is no place on the site that can accommodate snow removal and snow buildup. From the 7 proposed parking spaces, sidewalks, as well as providing a location for trash, recycling bins, equipment, bicycle storage, and air conditioners. This will present a problem whether there is snow removal service or not. The site will be primarily impervious. There will be additional stormwater runoff on the back lane, and the back lane does not drain well. We already have significant and dangerous ice buildup in the winter at the intersection of the two lanes. We have poured a concrete pad at the entrance of our driveway a week and a half ago to circumvent the water pooling issues that caused our gravel driveway to disintegrate into mud last spring. Water coming off the sites may also contribute to land drainage problems affecting both adjacent properties. Now, this is a driveway we poured. You can see that the water that we used a week and a half ago is still there. This was taken today. And it's a problem for us. We do have a huge puddle back there. The proposed new building actually does not meet the National Building Code 9.1.3.3 fire exposure. which stipulates the eaves be a minimum of 1.2 meters away from either side of the property line. The adjacent property's eaves are almost directly on the property line and are grandfathered past this requirement since they were built before the code was in place. The proposed building eaves should be required to be at minimum 2.4 meters away from the eaves of the existing properties. This is a particular concern since we lost three of our neighbors in fire on this lot, as well as both our residences suffering property damage. Snow drifting will occur. There will be additional snow buildup on the roofs of the adjacent properties, given the height and the extent of the building's roof. I requested a structural engineering study be conducted to determine.
Sorry, I'm just getting some administrative advice.
Okay. I request that a structural engineering study be conducted to determine whether the additional snow loading will have an effect on my much lower roof, since the roof over my family home is only 12 feet high and has a very slight slope. I have a letter from Kersher Kilborough, structural engineer, stating there should be a study done on both adjacent homes to see if the roofs will require strengthening with the additional snow load. The proposed building has no direct access to the parking spaces for the occupant. There is front access only. Street parking can be a challenge with the condominiums across the street, the Child and Family Services Safe House at 114 Scotia. What's it like to live here? We've been proud to be part of the community. We've enjoyed its eclectic architecture, and we love the black box, actually. The quiet Sunday walks, seeing the improvements residents make to their homes, and saying hello to our neighbors. Corey's and my properties are worth approximately $220,000. I find it difficult to believe there is an expectation that the proposed two-bedroom units could possibly go for $250,000 each. There is no guarantee that they will not end up as rentals. This particular area already has a higher population density than the majority of Scotia Street, with the 10 condominiums across the street, the Child and Family Services House at 114 Scotia, the duplex at 130 Scotia, and the R2 zoning on Inkster and Luxton, and should be considered already in alignment with our Winnipeg's development plan. Adding four more units to this location puts the plan at a tipping point that begins to challenge community stability. I'm not sure my family can continue to live at 112 Scotia. Because of the negative aspects of the neighborhood are beginning to outweigh the benefits. This is called middle class flight and happens when a neighborhood falls into decay. I made the call to 911 that informed the fire department of the horrific fire at 108 Scotia. I stood there helpless while three of my neighbors died. I was there when they removed the bodies. I organized the memorial service that took place for the community to mourn in front of their home. We have lived with the aftermath of the fire and the unsightly mess that is still on that lot today for years. We've had two cars, three bikes, three lawnmowers, a garden bench, and numerous yard tools stolen. Our home has been broken into. Our shed and front porch have been broken into on several occasions. I store my lawnmower in my basement, and that's a bloody big, heavy thing to carry downstairs. My car has been hit while it's been parked in front of my home and was recently vandalized. We also deal with couches and mattresses on the back lanes. Safety and security is a problem, yet we choose to stay and continue to invest in our property, plant new flowers, replace windows. I don't think we can continue to live at this location with a development on this scale. Its detrimental impact on our property, the quality of our personal lives, and in addition to our already growing concerns about safety and security, I respectfully request you to prevent this development from moving forward, and thank you for taking the time to listen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gregory. Any questions?
I have a few. First question, though, is, well, it's kind of a question, but it's a, do you know that all these zoning hearing and conditional use and variances, the city is not able to make a decision in regards to whether a building is a rental or an ownership?
Yes, that's my concern. It is my concern. I mean, there's a difference between a family wanting to move in and build relationship with their neighbors.
But I'm just suggesting, though, that any house on your block could become a rental, right?
Yes.
So, in terms of, well, anyway, I was just wanting your impression when you went door to door. I know that the person who signed at my house had this impression of rental, and not a, because of an experience that happened elsewhere on Scotia. So do you think that that was the impression that people were getting when they signed your petition? So yeah. Far away from Luxton?
I don't think that's necessarily true. It's intuitive that this will be a rental. $250,000 for these units. There will be another speaker addressing the real estate prices in the area. Is a pipe dream. It's not going to happen.
Well, let me ask you this question. What do you think the rental, how much rent do you think you have to charge for a $250,000 purchase home? I guess the real estate agent.
Well, first of all, you've got to be able to sell it for $250,000. That's my first challenge. Can you sell it for $250,000?
And if you take a risk, if they're willing to take a risk. But anyway, I guess the other I was going to point out that your water problem has existed since the late 1960s, because I remember falling in that puddle when I was riding my bike.
Yeah.
Because that your particular lot is in a back lane that's sloped away, and your actual property is lower than the. Than the adjacent properties, I think, on both sides, if I recall correctly.
It could be. We are a 1907 home without.
Yeah, you mentioned something. You were talking about the, I guess I'll ask the developer, but I was under the impression that the side yard was from where the eaves and to the.
The 2010 building code.
Yeah, the National Building Code, right? That's not the Manitoba Building Code.
Well, right? You know what, Ross, it should be after what we saw it with the fire that happened.
No, I understand, but you do know that there's houses all over the North End and West Kildonan that are a foot apart.
Yes, right? And it's a fire hazard. And
we understand that, but we're not going to...
Well, why would you build new, creating another fire hazard? That's my question. Mm-hmm. If the National Building Code is stating that this is the preferred way to build, why would the city oppose that? I lived more than 20 feet away from the fire, and I have bubbling paint. And I have bubbling paint on my siding. So from a safety perspective, it's wrong. What the city is doing is wrong.
I just want to point out, though, that the city lives with the Manitoba Building Code. And I can't get an answer whether or not the Manitoba Building Code in that particular section you mentioned has changed when the National Building Code is renewed, so I'm not sure. But so just more in the scale. So you're saying that the eave, just I want to make sure I get your image right. So you're saying that the eave right now is, as proposed, would be at the same height as the peak on your roof, at the very peak.
Yes, and...
And the 106, it's higher than the peak.
Yes.
Okay.
And the thing is you've got a rendering done, it's misleading. That's not how it looks. Because if I put my little house in front of that big house, this is the scale. You're looking at a big house in front of my little house.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Gregory, how did you come about... I know that I realize you're in the building industry... top view there of the roof from the architect?
I got it from the drawings from the developer.
Okay.
This is based on their drawings.
And the width between your home and the other home there?
This is exactly what is on those drawings. This is completely to scale.
Okay.
And I think you get an idea. We've got a dark corridor. It's not inviting. We've got places that these people, they can't park on the street. This is unsuitable for this location. It really is. And when you were asking Judy about density and how do you densify a city, you can call it...
I have a personal perspective.
You can call it urban development and urban planning, and you can call it all those types of things. But generally, densification happens around transportation hubs, ideally. It's where you can get on a bus, you don't have to drive your car, it's sustainable, it's the right thing to do. This doesn't do anything within that new urbanism type perspective. It does nothing but denigrate an existing neighborhood. And in this area that is already going downhill, we do not feel safe. This structure's built there. I'm sorry, my family has to go. The woman that gave me the keys to her home when we took possession of it was absolutely in tears. And she said, love it. And we have loved it. Mm-hmm. We can't be there anymore and be safe. At least that's my family's perspective.
Just one more follow-up question to you. Sorry, Council. See, you're opposed then to the massing and the size.
I'm opposed to any more densification in this portion of the city. I'm already maxed out. I can't afford to replace lawnmowers. I can't continue to have my son come over and actually move mattresses out of the way. I can't do it anymore. We are threatened from all areas, and I don't mean to sound like we're paranoid. We're not, because we're willing to stay with it, stay the course, and believe that the neighborhoods will get better. But the thing is it's dense enough. That area of Scotia, we're done. You don't need to do anything else.
What are you prepared
else
to support on this lot?
I understood from speaking with James Veach that this was zoned as an RM1, single family lot. I want it to stay a single family lot. You know what? If someone is having someone even build for them, they care about me, they care about Corey, they care about Henry Potts, they care about Dudley Thompson, they care about each other. We care about each other, we know each other, we shake hands, we say hello. What you're putting here is an opportunity for people who really don't care. This building's not designed to be welcoming. It's not designed to relate to any of the neighbors. It's a quick way to get four residences on one lot, and it's oversized, it's out of scale, and like I said, how much more can you densify us? How much more pressure can you put on Corey? Can you put on myself? Can you put on the dear ladies that work at that children's aid home? I don't know how much more. We're going to have additional noise. We're going to have additional water running off that site because there's no soil for it to drain in. You've got a 9-foot green space in the back, contrary to the 13-foot that everyone's been talking about. I have the amended drawings from James. You have a minimum front yard. 20 feet looks good, but also there's steps that are going out to there. That area from that 20 feet, there's a window that goes beyond that 20 feet. Where does the water go? This is called stormwater management.
You've answered my question. Councillor, do you have a question?
You mentioned two things about density, and you're into the design. You're working for Stantec and stuff. But so I know it's not the greatest service, but where is the closest bus stop? That is a bus route. Where is the closest bus stop to 108?
It's actually in front of Henry Potts' house.
Which is what number again, sir?
125.
So it's at Inkster and Scotia.
And it's not a major transportation hub. The city has no plans to extend
but it is
the
a transit
corridor
bus
down Main.
It is a transit bus. But anyway, okay. It is on a transit. I'm sorry. It is on a transit route. So the other question I had is, you know what? It's okay. I can't remember what it was. But.
Okay. Any other questions for the delegation? Okay, thank you very much, Mrs. Gregory. Joanne Layton? Okay.
By the way, the bus does not run on weekends.
No, I know. I said it wasn't the best bus service. Nope. It is a bus service.
Okay. So, yeah.
I agree. I stood and waited for the bus.
Name and address. For the record, please.
Joanna
Waitner,
I live at 141 Scotia Street. Okay. I have a letter from a retired lawyer in our area, Bev Barclay-Burkle, from 37 Scotia Street, which I'm going to read because it really fits into what I want to say. The area east of Main Street that runs the length of Scotia Street, the Wolseley area, and Armstrong's Point have similarities to our neighborhood. All three are on the fringes of serious decay. In each area, the homeowners who live in their homes are investing in their homes by improving and upgrading. At one time, the Wolseley area was also in decay. It was populated by rooming houses and homes that have been fragmented into apartments. Slowly over time, as homes were sold and converted back into single-family use, the area changed. Homeowners invested in their homes with many improvements, and today the Wolseley area is a jewel in the midst of decay. Armstrong's Point, also known as the Gates, sits at the edge of some of the worst decay in the city's core. But the homeowners in that area have a strong association that vigorously defends against any effort to allow the area to deteriorate by converting these homes into multi-use dwellings. The city has been respectful of these efforts and has supported the homeowners in maintaining what is a beautiful and safe area on the edge of one of the city's hardest neighborhoods. Every neighborhood has a personality. The Scotia area has a personality. Although the housing stock is older, the homeowners take pride in their yards. In the last 2 to 3 years, all over the area there is improvement. The exteriors of homes are being painted and restuccoed. There have been new single-family homes built. This is an area where people walk, where dogs are walked, where there's a sense of community. There's many walkathons that are held there. Unfortunately, over the years, certain larger homes have obtained zoning variances to allow two or more families to live in many of these houses. If the area is to retain its personality and for homeowners to continue to see the area as worthy of investment, this move away from single-family homes must stop. While it may be difficult for the odd homeowner to maintain a single home as a single family home, this is not sufficient reason to change the complexion of the area. We already have challenges to the west. The area west of Main is deteriorating. The housing stock is neglected and is not necessarily a very safe area to live in. The way to prevent this neglect from crossing Main Street is to ensure that the area is populated with homeowners living in single family homes. We are asking for the same consideration that Armstrong's Point has managed to achieve. Please do not spot zone any further housing for multi-use. Do not send our area down the road that Wolseley went before active homeowners turned it around to the jewel as it is today. I just wanted to say that my husband and I, when we originally bought our house, we bought it because it seemed like it was an area in transition. We could afford it, and we purchased it because we could see people starting to fix up their homes, and that trend has continued. Recently, we also bought a house on Scotia Street and restored it to its original splendor, updating all the plumbing, electrical, and interior with high-end finishes. There's hardwood floors throughout the old woodwork. When we were making the investment, we looked to invest in a house that was in the middle of the block where there was no chance of development of multi-unit housing going up. It wasn't on a corner, where the houses adjacent were all well kept and also in the process of being restored, and where the neighborhood as a whole was being transformed with renovations and upgrades, so that a single family would be able to enjoy the affordable, unique, family-oriented area that Scotia Heights is. I understand that the proposed condos are to retail for around $250,000 or more. I contacted a real estate agent, and I had them bring up some comps in the area for condos, particularly 105 Scotia, and also on Cathedral. Those houses sold from $87,000, the most expensive one being $262,000. That was on Scotia and Main, but that's in a historical church building. So there's reason to pay that kind of money. The house that my husband and I recently renovated and sold in September barely made more than $250,000, and it was all high-end finishes. My concern with this property that is going to be built is that to price it at $250,000 is actually pricing it out of the market based on the comps that I have pulled here today. And which may make the developer build it very cheaply if he actually looks into the market. Putting in laminate floors rather than high-end hardwood, putting in, you know, the cheap finishes, and then it'll turn into a rental unit. That's one of my concerns. It will also make the area, if it becomes rental, more transient. Again, putting a lot more people in a very small area. And just to address the parking issue, we've actually, on Scotia Street, coming out of our driveway adjacent to our house, it's a shared driveway, have accidentally slipped off because of the snow banks in the winter and hit my neighbor's car. It's very difficult to turn in and out of there because the street is so narrow. So actually adding more population to that small space will be a problem. One of the biggest concerns I have with the proposed rezoning is that if an existing house on Scotia or any other street in the area goes down, there will be a precedent set for developers of multi-unit housing to be able to just go in, get it spot zoned, and change it, which will bring even more congestion to the area. And I have to ask, what would stand in the way of me ripping down my house, bulldozing it, getting a nice little zoning variance, and putting up a nice complex next door to my neighbors? I have a river property. They'll be even worth more. There's nothing to set. This will set a precedence that will, I believe, continue on in our neighborhood whenever a house goes down. I know there's another on Bannerman. There was a house that burnt down. Nothing's been built there, but I mean, that place is fair game for any developers to increase the density in the area.
It's zoned R2, just so you know.
Pardon me?
That lot's zoned R2, just so you know.
Okay. But still going to bring more people to the area. This type of development in our particular neighborhood, I believe, will forever change the shape and functionality of this vibrant, historical, family-oriented neighborhood. And I think that's really important because it is a family-oriented neighborhood that is full of community activities. Sometimes it makes more sense to stay with the status quo, to maintain the integrity of a community, simply because it's the right thing to do. And we're asking that you consider keeping that R1 the right thing to do.
Questions?
Yeah.
Councilor Eady?
Well, I just, I lived east of Maine most of my life, mm-hmm. in rental houses as well as in owned houses. Just so you know, again, I'll just clarify this. We are not making a decision about whether a home is a rental property or an ownership. And it's not within, so that's not a perspective. So,
no, I realize
and I just wanted to point out that the lawyer's letter, I think, well, she's lived there quite a while. I don't necessarily agree with her depiction of our neighborhood, and I don't necessarily agree with the depiction that Scotia is the gated, is the gates, because Armstrong Point is quite different than our neighborhood. So, and I just wanted to point those things.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I think why I brought the real estate comps into question is because I really think it's unrealistic to get $250,000 per unit.
Upstairs, downstairs.
Upstairs and downstairs for this property, considering I just sold in September a single family house for $267,000. I mean, it's not.
Which address is that?
160.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I'm interested in developing the area and developing a community. We could have easily, actually, the house was perfect to put a rental unit downstairs there. We chose not to, because it keeps in the integrity of the whole community. So I think by having, you know, it's great to say we're going to build these super condos and they're going to have, you know, granite everything and whatever, travertine and hardwoods. But is that realistic for the area? Is that just a ploy to get us all to, okay, it's a $250,000 condo. That's not bad. But reality with the market, I don't think is it's there. You know, people are going to have issues with parking. People are going to have all those things that everybody brought up in that area. So to sell it for $250,000, I think is unrealistic if you actually look at the comps in the area for real estate, which means that you have more of a potential to just build it as a rental. Let's put the laminate in, let's just put, you know, the cheap finishes, builder's grade, everything, cookie cutter house. We're not going to make it fit into the area, which is the other issue which has been addressed. And then what'll happen is that'll make, it's the potential. I'm not saying it will be, but it's the potential for people to live in the area who do not have a vested interest in the area. And that's how an area decays. And I think we do have an older, established neighborhood, and I think people are fixing it up, and I think it is in transition. To single-family homes again. The home I live in was actually a duplex, and we have converted it back to a single-family home. So.
Thank you very much. Our last registered speaker for in opposition is Ricky Kraut. Do you wish to speak? Name and address for the record.
Vicky Kraut. I live at 60 Scotia Street. It's at the corner of Atlantic and Scotia. It's an infill house. It was built in 1956. It's been my home since 1956. It has dimensions of, it's 99 feet deep, just like this lot, but it's 80 feet wide. And there's a split-level house on it. One half of the house is two stories high, and the other half is one story high. It's a large house. But I think it fits the lot. There's more space on the side. It's a smaller home. It would be, even on this lot, it would be smaller than the proposed home. It would fit in better. But I don't, I mean, just in terms of the way my property, if that's where my house was, the way my property would look. But I don't think it would match the houses on either side, either side, either in style or in height, so I think something that is comparable to the houses on either side would be better. And I visited those duplexes and the triplexes that the city planner mentioned in his report, and they're really, they're modest, they're very modest homes. And you can see that, and also from what I know from the area, some of them were originally built as duplexes, but they were built to look exactly like the single-family homes next to them. And there are single-family homes which there are single-family homes which were converted to duplexes, and so they basically they all look alike. They're not outsized. And the proposed house would be fourplex would be outsized. And some of the justification that's given for building it there is the fact that there's 105 Scotia Street across the street. And I would not want for 105 Scotia to be a model for building anywhere in this neighborhood. It sits practically on the property, on the front yard property line. And on that account, if you look at figure one, it casts this big shadow over the street. And for the people who live across the street, it's really not a very attractive view. It relies on the yard to the north of it and to the south of it to give it the impression of that it has some kind of front yard, but it doesn't really have any kind of front yard. Really, that apartment block should have been 7 units instead of 10 units. And I think it indicates the kind of problems that you have when you put something that's too big on too small a lot. And I'm against using an R. The adjacent area has an R2 designation, but Scotia Street has an R1 designation. And I'm against using what's in R2 areas to justify the building of something in an R1 area that is characteristic of an R2 area. I lobbied for the downzoning of the. Successfully lobbied for the downzoning of the
Riverside of Scotia Street in 1986, and that's R1, and the reason for my doing so was to prevent an increase in density on the Riverside, which I figured was at higher risk than non-Riverside. But I can see from the way that city planners support these types of developments that nothing is really safe. You can cite buildings that were built that were built almost 100 years ago that you wouldn't be allowed to be built today. You can use them to push through an inappropriate type of housing for our time. And I think that such a house would cause, building homes like this would cause the area to look more congested. And I think that it would be in the interest of the city to and the neighborhood to look upon Scotia Street as a special street and to encourage people who want to maintain green areas, not only maintain green areas that are publicly visible, they're privately owned but publicly visible green spaces, they would enhance the whole street. And if this street were kept, if its greenness were enhanced and if the houses were not allowed, were kept, houses were not allowed to be so tall, but that would enhance the area also. And referring to about two houses that would be, this one is that's being proposed is only 20 feet or 22 feet from the front property yard line. That's too close for a house of this height. So I'm opposed to houses of that height being close to the front property line. But if it was further set back, then it might be acceptable, like 89 Scotia. So I'm interested in city promoting the maintenance of more green spaces and a property like this. I don't see why it necessarily has to be subdivided into two. Why do you necessarily, I mean, true, someone could come and build a single home on this property that's just like the proposed fourplex, but I don't think that they're going to, I don't think that's going to happen. Why not think positively about it, that there's a possibility that someone might be interested in a larger property? Why don't we encourage people to maintain larger properties instead of subdividing? They can do something nice for themselves and nice for the whole neighborhood.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Yep.
Councilor Eady?
So you don't agree with the narrow lots that the other five houses exist on between Luxton and Inkster on the west side?
Well, they're there already. And I suppose
they're 33 feet or less.
That's right. Some of those lots which are less than 33 feet they're also deeper than 99 feet. It's only the 106, 108, and 106 and 108 that are 99 feet deep. The others are deeper. Right. So that compensates in some way for their narrowness.
I can't remember. I'm pretty sure there is a back lane. You have a back lane behind your house,
that's
right?
Correct.
So you, was that zoned R2 in the past? Is that what you're saying?
That's
like the
right.
Riverside of Scotia? Like there is a duplex on the Riverside of Scotia between Cathedral and Bannerman, I think. Is one converted into a duplex? Because I went to school with Emily who lived there. But so are you saying that was R2 back in the 80s?
From the lane, there's a lane between Inkster Boulevard and Lansdowne?
Yes.
From that lane?
Yeah.
To Cathedral?
Yeah.
Scotia Street was R2 in 1985.
85, okay.
Thank you very much. That's very enlightening. And I always liked your infill house. Just when I could see. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grote. Is anyone else who wishes to speak in opposition to the application that I haven't called up yet? Okay, before we ask the applicant to come back, we're going to take a short 10-minute break. Oh, sorry. Is there anyone here for information who wishes to speak? Okay. We'll take a 10-minute quick break, and we'll reconvene at 7:43.